Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're going to jump ahead to Images of the Past now. It's a weekly feature where we introduce you to the characters and stories from South Dakota history that have shaped a state, its environment, its economy, as well as its individuals. Today, we welcome back Gary Enright. He's the director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer. Gary, welcome back to In the Moment.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be here again.
How's the weather out there, Gary?
Well, it's chilly today.
Yeah.
A little bit of clouds, and it acts like it wants to be winter and whatever.
It's March, right? Basically, yeah. It's March in South Dakota.
There you go.
So we're going to talk about lumber industry today. And where do you want to begin? When did people first sort of start seeing that as a economic resource in the state?
Well, it's actually started out about the same time the gold fever struck in the western part of South Dakota in the Black Hills. And what really happened was that the miners came out, or the prospectors, and when they staked a claim, and some of them had to dig into the earth and to shore up the sides of all of the digging that they completed, and they had to hold the dirt back from spilling off into the stream and into the area where they were looking for gold. And the natural thing to do was be to cut logs and put them up so that they would hold the dirt away from where they were working on their gold claim. So that's how it really started. And then it became, because there was such an abundance of timber in the Black Hills, the sawmill people started coming in and actually setting up sawmills and selling products to the gold prospectors. And that's how it all started.
So were they selling, were they manufacturing products here as well, or were they selling the raw lumber, I guess is what I'm wondering?
Basically, they were selling the raw lumber. They would take the logs and cut them up so that they would be usable for the mines in the first place, and then later on, everybody said, oh, by the way, as long as you're cutting these logs, I need some logs for my log cabin, or I need to build a storefront, or whatever it happens to be. And so when the gold became the primary draw to the Black Hills, there was a whole new industry started just because of the gold rush. So they started actually supplying materials within months of the strike, the gold strikes in the Black Hills. They started actually manufacturing lumber, that is, by cutting down the logs and cutting them up into boards and planks and all of that sort of thing that they needed to build houses and stores.
So what's the technology like at this time for this kind of work? How's it being done?
Well, actually, part of it was actually powered by steam engines.
Huh.
They would have portable steam engines. When you think of steam engines, you think of the trains and the big locomotives and all that. Well, they had smaller versions of that, and that used to power the saws. And they would power the flywheel, and the flywheel be connected to saw blades by a big belt, and they would actually use that to cut the lumber into various sizes. And it was pretty sophisticated, actually.
Mm.
And much of the population actually went to work for the sawmills because it was a good source of income for people who didn't do so well striking gold in the streams and rivers, because not everybody got rich striking gold, but a lot of people made a livelihood for the rest of the time they lived in the Dakota Territory or in the Black Hills by working in sawmills. And it became, in Custer at least, the number one industry after only a few years of having gold, the gold fever in the Custer area. It kind of switched to the lumber fever, I guess you might say.
All right. So because you can see the tree, you know it's there.
Yes.
Right. Right. You don't have to search for
that's
it.
True. They were abundant. And then, of course, all of this activity led to the formation of the government regulations that came in to to guide how people used the forests and how much lumber they could take and how much what they had to do with all of the residue from sawing up all the logs. There were rules and regulations that had to be made, and it was rightfully so. Mm-hmm. It was free enterprise, but it did need some supervision because, as in some places in the country, there were a lot of controversy because of clear cutting. That would mean they just simply wipe everything out that was growing in an area and no trees were left at all. And by the time that came about, in the Black Hills, there was regulations so that there were no clear cuttings. So we never really had that issue in the Black Hills.
Where did that supervision come from? Who were the...
Well, the Forest Service, mostly. The Department Federal. Of Agriculture was given the authority to take care of the forest regulations back in those days. And that still is true. The Department of Agriculture still has... The U.S. Department of Agriculture has the authority over the Forest Service. And so that became a whole regulatory body that has become quite a major factor in regulating how people and how much people cut as far as doing logging in the Black Hills. And that exists today. Mm. But instead of having probably 40 or 50 sawmills in the Black Hills, we're probably down to about a half a dozen now. And they're very large, and they're very responsible in what they do.
What's the impact of that, of those regulations being sort of in place at what seems to me to be kind of a fairly early time?
Well, the impact was that the various companies were able to go into an area, and they were given, I would say, they were given some consideration by the Forest Service for moving from one place to another to establish their sawmills in an area where there was an abundance of trees, just to make sure that they weren't clear-cutting or getting too much timber cut that might cause some erosion. And so there was a kind of a quid pro quo between sawmills and the Forest Service, and they managed over the years to get along pretty well because everybody understood that these millions of acres of trees that were in existence in the Black Hills were not going to last forever if they abused the right to go into the forest and to cut wood.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about this week's Images of the Past segment. My guest is Gary Enright, director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer. We're talking about the timber industry, lumber in the Black Hills. And Gary, I'm wondering what, I'm thinking back to the Gordon Stockade when we talked about that previously. What are some of the structures that would have been built with this lumber at that time?
Sure. Actually, the very first log structure in the Black Hills was the Gordon Stockade.
Hey.
And it was a stockade that was made by cutting big trees and standing them up and sinking them into the ground. And so that this was not built like a log cabin where the logs would be horizontal. These were vertical. And it offered more protection and was about 20 feet high. And that was the first structure. That was then followed by some building of log cabins. And oddly enough, the log cabin that I'm looking at right now from my office across the street from the museum here in Custer is the oldest structure in the Black Hills. And it is what you would call a trimmed log building. It means that the logs were squared away so that they were square rather than round. And that house, which was built by Dr. Flick, the first doctor to come to Custer and the Black Hills, he built this cabin, and somebody has managed to preserve it for 141 years, and it is the oldest structure in the Black Hills. But it is kind of reminiscent of what houses and stores and buildings looked like back in those years. And it was an industry that grew rather rapidly because of the gold searching again. But it was something that was very important to the economy of growth in the Black Hills.
All right. So you're telling me from the museum, you can look across and see the Flick cabin still today.
That's true.
It's right there as you drive through the main drag of Custer.
That's correct. It's right across the street.
How come I've never noticed it, Gary? I need you to give me a tour of this town because
we would be more than happy to.
I'm looking for a place to eat lunch, and I'm missing some really significant stuff.
Well, I hate to give a commercial boost for somebody, but it's right across the street from the Black Hills Burger and Bun. So.
Okay, well then, now I know where it is.
So. You do, and that's something else that I'm going to be blatant about, and that is that the museum opens on the 5th of May.
So, all right.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
Excellent. Good news. So what's in the cabin now?
Well, we have it decked out as it would have been in the 1870s, and we have the old-style beds, the old-style kitchen, the old-style fireplace, everything that existed in a pioneer cabin back in the 1870s is in this cabin for people to look at and get an idea and a feel of what life was like. So.
All right. So what? How was it sort of heated or ventilated? Tell me about the cabin itself.
Well, the cabin actually was heated with a fireplace.
Really?
That provided the primary heat. The cabin is fairly small. It's only like 22 feet by 15 feet. And it contained everything in one room. So it was a one-room log cabin. And they jammed in all of the beds and everything else that they needed, a table, chairs, stove, washing machine, whatever else they needed was all inside the cabin.
Interesting. All right, Gary, what else is in Custer that I've walked right by and not noticed? Maybe you shouldn't.
Well, of course, one of the interesting parts of Custer is that if people like to just stand in an area where history actually took place. About 3 miles east of town, close to where the stockade is what they call the permanent camp. It is where General Custer and 1,100 people who came here on the Black Hills Expedition of 1874, where they actually camped for about 7 days. It was the longest encampment of the Black Hills Expedition. They stayed here longer than anywhere, and Custer said, because it's in the beautiful, colorful valley of the Black Hills, that is, of course, where Custer is located. And the Chamber of Commerce doesn't pay me to say this, but it is, General Custer did say it was one of the most beautiful areas he saw in the entire Black Hills.
I don't know that I would disagree with him. So, and the Chamber of Commerce doesn't pay me to say that.
Okay.
That either. You just, Gary Enright, one of the things I really appreciate you is that you love this. You love your work and you love the history of the region. And you're one of those people who's really preserving it for the rest of us, because I would not know any of this without you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate our monthly visits. This is fun.
Yes, absolutely. Gary Enright is director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer. You can go online, sdpb.org/images-of-the-past. You can read about the lumber industry in the Black Hills and see some pretty amazing photos there as well, courtesy of the 1881 Courthouse Museum. Gary, I appreciate everything you do. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Laurie.